That was the beginning song, one of the beginning songs, excuse me, Moon Glow and Theme from Picnic by Esther Phillips' album And I Love Him. That was a very notable song, I guess, in the film. If you heard it, it's a notable song, I guess. And that's, it's like most of Scorsese's movies, they're embedded, the songs are embedded under narration. So a character is speaking, a character is narrating, something's happening, and the song is being played. And it just adds just a third, I always say this, but it adds just a new dimension to the image, and to the video, and to the film when you're watching it. It gives it a sense of complexity. It gives it a sense of richness that I think is so, so valuable and so entertaining. Not only entertaining, but informative. I say informative because I think it does justice to the era, to the time period in which this is happening. Although that piece of music didn't come out then, it was being played then, and it was being celebrated then, and it was really being, it was integrated into society. It was something that people appreciated, and that's something that's very important, I think, when storytelling is you're adding all the elements of what life was like during that time. And that's something that he does just beautifully. He does that so well. Magnificently, I think. So that's one thing. And now then we get into the complexities of the different shots. So this is just, you know, when the moon glow is played, it's just a tracking shot, and you can see a character with a suitcase and they're going to Kansas City or something like that. But this next song, I think, is going to be so important. It's also a jazz song. It's called Compared to What. It's a live version by Les McCann and Eddie Harris. And that is a real showstopper of a piece, and it's a long piece, but it's, one, it's so meaningful, two, it's so perfect with the film and what's going on in the film. I'll just play it, and then we'll discuss. Okay, hope you enjoy. So that was Compared to What by Les McCann and Eddie Harris live at the Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland, June 1969. That song is so important, it's so influential. We won't discuss the meaning of the song necessarily right now, because that in itself can be a whole 15, 20 minutes. We'll talk about it in relation to the film. And it's so perfectly placed in the film. I think probably one of the best choreographed scenes in a film I think I've ever seen. And I think it's undisputed in the film community that it's just so beautifully choreographed. And that's because every shot matches the end jazz riff that you heard, the end sort of instrumental aspect of the film, an instrumental part of the film. Every movement, every swish, every pan from the camera is in sync with that. It's in unison with that jazz solo, and it's such a beautiful accompaniment, and It's so gracefully captures the opulence, I think, and the grandeur, right? The vision, the how grand it is of the casino and how it operates, right? And so it's electrifying, it's exciting, and it's dynamic, and it's just like a huge thing just exploding. And that's what this song brings to the piece, to the film. And it does that in accompanying the fast-paced camera movement, right? And that's something that we've seen Scorsese do a lot, right? Switch pans, and every, you know, directors do that. But with the music, it elevates it, right? And that's something that I've noticed, and I think lots of other people have noticed that about the film. And I think that's why it's undoubtedly one of the best choreographed scenes in the film, I think. And right, and it wins for that, and for this song and for that reason. And so after this, I think we've all been able to capture, we've all seen that Scorsese obviously can capture that image, that feeling of that environment, right? He's a master at that. He's a master at that in any sort of environment that you put him, that he tries to depict. He depicts it so beautifully. He depicts it, and he brings out the feelings that you're there, you're in that environment, you're with those people. You're in that scenery. He's so good at that. And so after that, it becomes a little more character focused. I think after this part of the film is over, it becomes more character focused, just like we noticed in the other film, Goodfellas, when we were reviewing that, as well as other films that I've mentioned. And so I want to play a song that really emphasizes the shift in character. And that's something that I'll emphasize. I'll continue to emphasize for the rest of this podcast. That was Unforgettable by Dinah Washington. I apologize for the earlier statement of saying it was Unforgettable by Sarah Vaughan. That's not correct. It's Unforgettable by Dinah Washington. And that was a pivotal song, I think, in the for a pivotal scene in the movie. And that was exactly the scene of where Sam Ace Rothstein, played by Robert De Niro's character, asks Ginger McKee, Ginger to marry him. Ginger is marvelously played by Sharon Stone. And that was just a huge pivotal scene. And it was scene that was pivotal for, I think, one reason. And the one reason was that, well, they were in a relationship together. And that was because they were both, I guess, in love with each other, not in love with it, but infatuated with each other. I want to say that, and that was depicted during the great scene where she throws the chips in the air, and then they meet eyes, and he falls in love, so to speak. But he falls in love, and I think they're both infatuated with each other, but she's not in love, and she admits to not being in love with him during that scene. And I think that's so crucial because she has already said, okay, well, I'm here supposedly for a short time, and I don't really want to marry you, and I might, and for what the reason is, for why that is, she's not making explicit, yet she's still saying that she doesn't want to be with him because she doesn't love him, right? That's the implication, at least. She's stating that she doesn't love him, right? She's like, I don't love you, I'm not in love with you. The implication thereby being, I don't want to spend my life with you. But he does want to spend his life with her, and he's made that very clear because he's 43 years old and he really loves her very much, and he doesn't believe there's anyone better that he would want to be with, which is all very questionable, I guess, because I think she clearly established in the beginning, even before she threw the chips in the air, even before she made a move on Ace, that she was not a lot of great things, predominantly being a cheater, and then someone who's a stealer, as well as a liar to that Arab man who I guess she was working for. His involvement in all this is unclear. Yet, she's established those two things in the very beginning. So for him to think that she's the best person to be with is questionable on his part. But she's already established that she doesn't love him. So what's even more questionable on his part is why he wants to marry her and continues to pursue to want to marry her despite her objections. So that's very interesting. So that dynamic and that scene, which ends up resulting in them getting married, which is also really questionable. The basis, the foundation for this marriage seems to be that, okay, well, he'll provide everything to her, and then she accepts. And that deal, it's almost like a contract. It's almost like a business. So if I get everything, then I'm in. But if I don't get everything, then I'm out or I'm not in. But so the deal that's being established is, okay, I'll take care of you for the rest of your life. And then she's like, okay, yeah, I want to be taken care of, so why might as well commit. But there's no emotion there. And I don't believe that it matters to him whether she really loves him or not. It's more about him towards her. It's a very interesting mindset, I would say, that's being depicted here. But the dynamic is genuinely, I think, kind of flawed. Nonetheless, that poses and presents a lot of problems that do come. And that takes us to our next song. Because this is a pivotal song in terms of genre. What I mean by that is it stops going from the jazz, the nice smooth jazz, to rock now, or pop. And that I really love about it. It doesn't really represent anything dark. It just means that there's a new chapter, and that chapter is post-marriage. And that's something that I really think is, it's an exciting, fresh time for both of them because they're both happy. Whether or not that happiness lasts is not in question here. It's just the fact that they're both happy. That's something, it's a short-term happiness that I think exists, right? You can't deny it. There's a short-term happiness, and that's what's being depicted in the next scene when, after they're getting married, he's presenting her, as he promised, with all this stuff and jewels and diamonds and jewelry and a bank key for millions of dollars that he's going to give to her and only her. And all this stuff is he's holding his end of the bargain, and as he should. And that all results in this song being played, a beautiful pop song called I'll Take You There by the best of the, it's an album called The Best of the Staple Singers. We'll play that now. So that was I'll Take You There by the Staple Singers. So, yeah, so as I explained before, I'm sorry for the audio cuts. I don't know why they were audio cuts, technical difficulties. We had two audio cuts for I'll Take You There, and I tried playing two different versions and both cut. I'm sincerely apologize for those cuts. But anyways, that was the song, and that was basically symbolizing short-term happiness, I guess, short-term fun for both parties. And then it kind of took its dark turn, and that was partly influenced by Nicki, and that's Nicki, and that's the gangster I said, who was long friend, neighborhood, or friend pal, or youth pals with De Niro's character, Ace, and he comes to Las Vegas, and that's also before they get married. So, and then he rises to prominence, and so he becomes more well known in Vegas because he's a ruthless gangster, and he doesn't care that he's a ruthless gangster, but Ace wants to be more legitimate, even though he's not legitimate. And so there's two conflicting interests here, because Nicki doesn't want anything to do with, or Ace doesn't want anything to do with Nicki, but Nicki has to sort of drag him in, or has to harm his reputation in some way, because they're both connected to each other, because they work for the same people. The gang, which is not mentioned, its location is not mentioned, just back home is mentioned. We presume that back home means Chicago, but nonetheless, they both work for the same people. So he is influencing Ace, and Ace wants to be legitimate. So there are conflicting interests here. And the other part is that their marriage genuinely is not a good one. It's not based on anything that's good. It's based on a business deal, and the business deal consists of two parties that don't really love each other, don't love each other at all. I mean, she doesn't love him. She's made that clear. He loves her, but it's more as if he thinks he's more infatuated with her, as opposed to, it's more like he wants a trophy wife as opposed to somebody he genuinely loves. And this is evidenced by the fact that after they get married is he basically uses his power and his influence through the mob and through the mafia, a group he doesn't want to really be connected to, but seemingly relies on for a lot of the tasks that he wants to get completed. They beat up her friend, basically, an ex-pimp. Nonetheless, her friend, Lester Diamond, is played wonderfully by James Wood. And they, Pesci and De Niro, so Ace and Nicki, coordinate to beat him up. They get a bunch of thugs to beat him up, basically. And on exactly for what reason? The reason being that he doesn't want him to be in her life anymore, and thinking that he's a bad influence, which, you know, he might be, but that's not fair at all to her. That's controlling and that's domineering, but that's something that he wants to do. That's something that he does. He is controlling and he is domineering and he is manipulative and all those kinds of bad things. So he has a lot of bad qualities to him, and those qualities, I think, are shown pretty obviously or pretty clearly after the marriage. And that's something that's really, I always find quite fascinating with the movie, to understand, look at this dynamic and say, okay, well, it's not all her fault, and here's why. And so even during that song and late during that part, and later this song is played. It's called The Glory of Love by the Velvetones, and it's really an amazing song. When the second time it's played, it's when we realize that Nikki and Ginger are having an affair, and that's really, that's a huge twist, that's a huge pivot. Because not only is now his wife betraying him, but his best friend. So, take a listen. Glory of Love by the Velvetones. Just an amazing piece in general. Again, one of those amazing pieces. But also, in the context of the film, so important. Because, again, symbolizes the affair. And that's something that's huge, right? The affair is just a bomb that's been thrown to Ace. And now Ace has to take the fact that both his wife and his best friend are betraying him and could potentially cause huge harm, right? Huge damage, and destroy their empire and destroy not only their involvement in Las Vegas, the mob's involvement in Las Vegas, but his permanently destroy his reputation and his position, right? As a squeaky clean frontman, right? As a squeaky clean frontman. So that's a very interesting thing that I found with that moment in the film. And from there, I would say, from there, everything goes down. And particularly the marriage. And that's something that I want to harp on a little more, because I think it's just such a crucial aspect of the film, and something that really makes it for understanding Ace and who he is, right? Because ultimately, again, it's like so many of Scorsese's pictures, it's a character story. It's a character story, because Ace is genuinely flawed, right, in a lot of ways, and driving his wife out is one of those ways. Driving his wife completely insane is one of those ways, and that's really captured in when his wife leaves, so to speak, to go shopping with her, that man, Lester Diamond, and their daughter. Not their daughter, but Ace and her daughter. And they take the daughter to go shopping with her ex-boyfriend, I guess, or ex-pimp. And then this song is played. And the next song is a more modern song, Without You. It's a Harry Nilsson song. It's a love song. Now, that song, it's not necessarily related to the theme, but it's not necessarily played. It's not a foreground song, right? It's in the background when they're shouting and screaming, but it's still a very important song, I think. So we'll play it, and then we'll get into the more meaty ends of the picture and the songs that are played there, which really capture the essence of the film. So there you have it, Without You by Harry Nilsson. And this signifies the beginning of the tumble, I'd say, the beginning of the tumble of their relationship, because she wants to come back, and he wants to get the kid back, right? So, and she wants to come back as well, but I don't know if she actually wants to come back. It's more as if this is, again, she's she wants someone to pity her, kind of a thing, and she is kind of being a victim to get back. I don't think she wants to get back, so she's being a little manipulative there. She doesn't really want to be in a relationship with him, right? She wants to be with him, so to speak, because she's taken care of and she's financially there for her needs, but she doesn't really want to be with him. And she made that clear, but she still has that manipulative edge to her, right? So that has never really left her, and that's something that I really don't like about her character, but something that I think could have been rectified, could have been changed if Ace was a good guy, if Ace was a man of that wasn't controlling, that wasn't domineering, that wasn't just emotional, right? And even though he's not, he's very methodical, right? But there are elements of his life that he's emotional. He's very decisive that this is the emotional path I'm going to take, and I have to control everything, and this is what I have to do. And it's very sad to see a person that can lose another person, can destroy another person, in this case Ginger, because of that quality. It's very sad and very I think frankly a very pathetic thing to see. And so with that, we get to the final song, because I know we're short on time now. That really captures the essence, I think, of so many elements of this grand, epic movie. And it's the theme from Le Mépris, if you've heard of, that's a French movie. Old 62, I think, 60. I might be getting the date wrong. It's sometime in the 60s that movie was released. The movie called was called Contempt. The movie was called Contempt, Le Mépris. This is the theme from that. And it's just, it captures everything about the film, the vision, the grandeur, the spectacle, right? The huge, the grand nature of the film. That's so visually, the aesthetic it captures. The Las Vegas desert, Las Vegas casinos, Las Vegas lights, everything is spectacular. So that the music captures that. Then it captures the characters, right? The trouble of the characters, the impulsive nature of some of the characters, the marriage, right? Nikki and his involvement, his ruthlessness, the collapse of two individuals whose egos are just always clashing, and how that has clashed an empire, and the ending, the last few days of the mob in Las Vegas, it really captures that. And I think that it's just the best song, and rightfully and appropriately the closing song, the closing credits song. And so here's Le Mépris for a taste. I think I've played it before on this program, but in the context of discussing this film, I think it's even more important. That'll be the final song we'll play today. And that is all for this week's episode. I'm your host, Ojas Rao, for Film Score Friday, every Friday here at 2 p.m. here on Radio Laurier. And yes, that is it. We finished our episode. I think it's been our seventh episode now. And so, yes, this has been amazing. I've really loved this. And thank you for all your support, listening, and all that, for everybody who's out there. And we'll continue next week. Thank you, and have a great weekend.